I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Today on First Lady and Friends, we had an incredible conversation with the interim president at SUU. Her name is Mindy Benson, and she has an amazing story about how she became the interim president and her connections to SUU and Cedar City, the area that she grew up in and continues to live and thrive and be an incredible leader. Let's get proximate. We're back here on First Lady and Friends, and today we have a fabulous guest that has become a very dear friend of mine over the last few years. Her name is Mindy Benson. Title, President Benson.
Interim President.
Interim
President of Southern Utah University. Correct.
Yes, of SUU. And this has been a thing that you've been doing for about seven, 8 months now?
I joked and said it would be 3 to 6 to 9 months, and I think we're closing in on the nine and still going strong.
Yeah.
It started in July 26th, my first day on the job. We had flooding in Cedar City. And
that's
we had
right.
200 displaced students and community members without homes, and we convened a task force and stood in front of news cameras, sort of like your life for a minute, but just it was surreal that I was standing in front of all those on the first day on the job.
That is wild. I had forgotten that. Oh my God.
And there was flooding on week two, flooding on week three. It's fine. It's just been that way since. It's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, we moved our boys. So our boys go to SUU, two oldest.
Which we love. They are so good on campus. They're involved and amazing students. It's just so fun to see them thrive.
They love it. But I do remember moving kids in, and there was in August, and there were sandbags out in front of their apartment buildings.
Because it had just flooded. 4 weeks, four floods. 100-year floods. And
what a way to get welcomed in. So let's talk about what came before that. So let's talk a little bit about your background. You grew up in Cedar City.
Born and raised in Cedar City. This is home. It is home. I graduated from SUU with a degree in zoology and moved immediately and vowed I would never come back because I wanted to conquer the big city.
A familiar story.
Right? And I came up and conquered the big city, and my mentor called me and asked me if I wanted to take my dad's job on campus 15 years after he had retired. I couldn't turn that down. So I moved back and said, I'll give you 3 years. And that was 27 years ago. So worked out well.
Rural Utah just grabs you and holds you. And we love it.
We love it. We do. I'll stay there forever if I can.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your parents and your family growing up there in Cedar City.
Born and raised, we're multi-generational. We were actually part of the founding of Southern Utah University. And as we celebrate our 125th anniversary, it's been really fun to look back and see where my family came from and their involvement in that and the legacy that we now share. So my grandma, I actually have her diploma from SUU, and it was in 1921. It was BAC at that point. I have her diploma. My dad attended there and then worked there, and then I took his job. My sister was the first female student body president, and I'm the first female president. So
that's so cool. I did not know that. That's
breaking
fantastic.
Breaking barriers, one Benson at a time. That's what we do.
That's incredible. So you had one sister that was there. What other siblings did
all
you
five,
have?
There, okay. There are five of us. I'm the youngest, and that's why I'm fierce, because I had to survive them. My older brother's name is Dude, and if I can survive Dude growing up, I can survive anything. And all five of us graduated from SUU.
Oh, wow.
Went out and conquered the world.
Wow, that's incredible. So now tell me, your dad retired. Is he still living?
Both parents have passed. My dad actually had Parkinson's for 34 years. He had it before I was even born.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and he retired early and had Parkinson's. And my mom had ovarian cancer for 30 years. I was a caregiver most of our lives with them, but what a blessing to be able to do that and how rewarding. They've both passed.
Wow.
And I can feel often that they're much happier that they are where they are than in the middle of this. My mom would not have done COVID well.
Yeah. Yeah. We're seeing that with my parents. It's been a struggle. My dad has really bad health and it's just been really scary. And, you know, as kids, you just sit there and watch and what's the balance between being with them and hurting them, you know, giving the, and they need you and they need people. But yeah, it's been a
bossing them. That doesn't go well for anybody in our family. And we got it from our parents,
our stubbornness.
Mm-hmm. We did. Absolutely did. So they didn't love that. And they're happy to be where they are. What a great legacy they left us though.
Yes. Oh, that's incredible. I didn't know all the ties to SU. Let's talk a little bit about your decision. So you decided to go into zoology. What was that decision making like?
Well, let's back up for a quick minute because I started working at SUU when I was 12.
Oh, no kidding.
A TART girl at the Utah Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, I love that. And they still have them, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I could sell them with the best of them. I sold tarts and Whorehound and Humbug, and I was in love with all of the actors that were there and used to, as a 12-year-old girl, chase them around. Benjamin Bratt, if you know Benjamin Bratt, that name.
Yes.
He was at the festival.
I did not know
that. And I was 16 and had the biggest crush on him. I followed him around.
Oh, I think I still do. Like, Law and Order. I was all in on him on Law and Order.
Absolutely. I'd watch everything. And when he and Julia were together, I just, I remember when. So I grew up on campus and I grew up with all of those fabulous actors. And that was a formative time for me of learning who I was and PR skills like no other from Fred Adams. There's nobody better to learn that from.
Absolutely nobody better.
But for some odd reason, I decided that biology pre-med would be the best place for me. And that's what I always wanted to do. And my dad always questioned that and said, what are you going to do with a biology degree? If you get a plumbing certificate, you plumb. If you get a teaching certificate, you teach. But what are you doing with biology? And dad, I'm going to be a doctor. And he said, no, you're not.
Oh, no
He
kidding.
Can see. He knew. So I got involved in student government at SUU and started running events and running concerts and thinking, this is so much more fun than sitting in a doctor's office. But I was too close to finishing that degree. So I suffered through all the physiology classes and the chemistry classes, and I can identify any bug or any muscle, but that is not what I chose to do in my profession. Sometimes I still wish, though, that I was a doctor.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's such an interesting thing. I think my science classes were some of my most fun, interesting
love science.
Classes.
Absolutely love science, and I'm so left-brained that it just makes sense to me. And I love how the human body functions. It still fascinates me. But I think that was very helpful in caring for mom and dad to have all that knowledge.
Yeah.
Oh, there was
absolutely.
A reason.
Yeah. So then after zoology, and then did you go right into a master's after that? Or was there...
I didn't. I graduated and that's when I moved to Salt Lake and vowed I'd never go back and conquered the world up here and dated lots of fun guys and played around as much as I possibly could. And then I got that call to go back and... My social life definitely changed when I moved back to Cedar City, but that's where I was supposed to be, and I know that.
That's so amazing. Okay, so then you've been there ever since, and you say that. So then, did you get your communications degree, your master's degree,
In communication in 2008 from SUU?
Okay,
we actually were the first cohort to go through that program. And my curriculum for that program was I wrote the curriculum for an event management class, and I've been teaching that class on campus ever since.
Wow. So, but not only have you been teaching it, you've been living it. So you've been planning some really incredible events. Let's talk about your career in event planning.
Yeah, that's a secret life that not very many people know about, but I fly off less now when I'm the president. I don't have the time to do this sort of thing, but... For quite a while, I would fly off nationally and produce events nationally with a company that I work with. We're talking the Republican National Conventions in Tampa and Minneapolis and New York, presidential inaugurations for President Bush, multiple political events all over the country, and then touring with national touring acts. So
that's
massive
incredible.
Events. It's so strange to be standing in the White House and put the President of the United States on stage and say, "Mr. President, go on now." And I'm thinking, how did this girl from Cedar City, how is this happening right now? At one point, I was on the stage literally next to the President, and my uncle called, and he never calls me. And they're from Kanawha, right? So he calls and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm standing next to the President, kind of busy. Can I help you with anything?" And he, "You're what?" It's just surreal moments like that have made me do a life check. Pretty cool experiences.
Wow. Wow. That's
lots of stories to tell, too.
But yeah.
I think that's why I keep getting hired, is I don't name names.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask, but apparently you're not going to name
names. Oh, I can still do general stories, but...
I mean, what's your most interesting... I mean, like, what fascinated you, or what surprised you about any certain president?
You know, it's fun to work with them and get to know their idiosyncrasies. President Bush, for example, always had to be on time, and he was so frustrated if anything was even 30 seconds off. Mm-hmm. He was absolutely crazy about that, and that was something we were very aware of and made sure that the events ran exactly on time. So wow. Just things to know that helped them become more comfortable. And I've witnessed some pretty historical moments as part of that, and that's lifetime memories.
That's amazing. I read a book. It's one of my favorite books, and I recommend it to everybody, just anybody that's been a parent or worked with kids in any way that, you know, have disabilities or anything like that. It's called Love That Boy.
Oh, that's a good one.
Have you read that?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, in that book, he talks about, because he was a White House correspondent for many, many years through several different presidents. And he talks about the difference in their reactions and sort of the way they interacted with his son who had autism. And it was right. It was President Bush that said, "Just love that boy."
See,
and that was where the title of the book came.
He had some really great wisdom. And it's just amazing to watch the actual person versus the personality that is portrayed.
Yeah.
You know something about that, right?
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. And so I think that's really, really interesting. And I think, there's the real person, and there's these little things that bother him. I do have to say that, like, Spencer and I both are very punctual. And so I think we can relate to President Bush and being very punctual and being on time, and it matters.
It does. It matters to people.
I was trying to teach my kids this, especially my oldest, who does not naturally have a real clock in his head. And
just a different personality.
Oh,
and I'm
just
not
a yellow
wired
personality.
Oh
yeah.
No, I'm so red.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I'm
he's very yellow. I'm not. And we butted heads over this for years and years and years. And I kept saying, before he left to go on his LDS mission, I said, "You cannot. This has to be something that you learn. You cannot be late. You can't be late for appointments. You can't. That's people's time. That you have to. That's important. You know. Just
did
drilling
he learn
it
that?
In." Well, then he got called to go to Africa.
Oh,
there
no.
is no time
no,
in
no.
Africa. Like, it's
no.
not a thing. So he came back worse than he left.
Totally fine with that, right?
Yes.
He'll adapt.
Yeah.
He'll be just fine all of his life. It's probably us who are far
I
too
know,
uptight.
I
and
know.
I need to learn how to wind down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I'm like you. I can't even take being a minute late. It makes me nuts.
So that's good. We all have our things. Well,
we
that's
do.
Really interesting. And so then the other really incredible connection that we have is that you worked on our inauguration.
Right. What an honor that was to be able to do that. That was one of my favorite events. We brought students from my event management class to that, and they had a front row seat.
And
yeah, they had a front row seat to history. It was such a remarkable experience to be there. Turned out to be a gorgeous day. Great
yeah.
experience.
And the first ever inauguration that was not at the Capitol.
Which spoke volumes, I thought, about you and Spencer, Governor, wanting to get out and wanting to be among the people and just shake things up. I think it really speaks volumes about who you both are.
Well, and speaks volumes about your team being able to pull off that kind of event in that kind of environment. We have to remember, this is January of 2021. So,
right.
January
right.
4th of 2021.
Right in the middle, but it wouldn't have happened any other place.
Yeah,
right?
In the deep heart of COVID. And
we were able to do it outside.
Yeah.
What an opportunity. 2 years earlier, I had run the governor of Tennessee's inauguration, helped with events for that. And I didn't recognize that I would be utilizing that at the Utah governor inauguration. But it was really fun to think, OK, that's why we did that, why we did that. And this is how we can do it in the middle of COVID.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we did it outside at TuaCon, and it was just really cool. And we did, there was a really interesting COVID moment when we had some musical talent that mm-hmm. was coming to do a song that was so dear to our hearts. And
I shed so many tears during that. My goodness. It was so emotional.
At one point I was sitting there on stage and they are singing and I am like, I have to like pull myself together. Cause I'm like,
I'm impressed that you
cannot sit here and heaving sobs. You cannot do this.
I'm so impressed that you could, though. You did such a good job. And to see the love between the two of you and how proud you were of each other. It wasn't he of you or you of he. It was each other, and you were absolutely a team. I'm very observant, and I watched a lot of things that day, and it was just so impressive to watch your entire team.
Well, it was a beautiful day, and you guys made it happen. But I do remember one sort of hiccup that we had real late the night before. With a COVID hiccup.
Yeah.
So we were testing everybody to come into the event. Everybody had to be tested the day before.
High stress, high stakes.
Super high stress. We have, you know, all these plans. So if somebody tests positive, and our beautiful penny whistler, he tests positive.
And it's not like you can find a lot of penny whistlers everywhere.
I think there's just one.
Right.
I think
the penny whistler.
For this Celtic version of...
That's important.
...of this song... of Homeward Bound, and it was, it was like throw everybody, you know, trying to figure this out. Our incredible cellist.
Yes.
Spent all night rewriting the cello part to cover the penny whistle part, and nobody was the wiser.
Nobody knew.
Until right this moment.
That's the whole thing you do with events.
Yeah.
Nothing's
so
a crisis.
You guys pulled that off. It was absolutely incredible, and I can't wait to hear more about all the other stuff you've been doing at SUU, and we'll do that when we come right back.
Thanks.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back here with interim president of SUU, Mindy Benson.
Hi.
She's here.
Still here.
Still here.
Still Mindy.
We are talking about your experience being an event planner. How do you think that prepared you maybe for what you're doing now?
I have looked at the parallels here. One of the things I teach in my class is nothing is a crisis. Because things are going to happen regardless.
Penny whistlers maybe were a crisis. No,
penny whistlers are going to test positive, or something's going to happen, and it's how you deal with it. And the first day of my job, when I was in the midst of flooding, I thought maybe this is a crisis.
The flooding,
but
may
we still can't fall apart.
Yeah,
right. So I think events, high stress, high stakes. You have to be resourceful, and you have to just figure it out and find a solution. It's just like leadership every day. And the relationships that you build, the networking that you do, and the people that you work with are what make it happen. Regardless of what walk of life you're in, relationships are the key to everything that you do. And I feel strongly about that.
Yeah,
our human connection is critical to who we are and what we do. And I think that's what a good leader does, is connect with people and care.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And I think that you were so prepared for that moment. So prepared.
Thank you.
As much as anybody could ever be in that moment. And you were phenomenal. I mean, I think the whole state just watched and went, oh my gosh.
Here we are. We're just going to.
No water, then all the water.
All the water. And oh, we'll put up a Red Cross shelter and we're going to feed everybody. And then we're going to find housing for students. We're already in the middle of a housing shortage. We lost 200. That's fine. Well, it's fine. We'll figure it out. Nothing's a crisis. You have to go through it. Can't go around it.
So. Yeah, and you guys really did some creative things around the housing. Talk a little bit about what some of those creative solutions that you came up with.
Our community rallies, as our community always does, as Utah always does, mm-hmm. right? They rallied. And we asked them to open rooms. We asked them to, do you have anything for rent? Do you have a mother-in-law casita that you could rent? And we suddenly came up with rooms. And just as we thought we were out of rooms, somebody would post more rooms, mm-hmm. and we were able to get through it. But we did that with community help. We rented different downtown motels were turned into student housing for a little bit. We explored buying a hotel. We were willing to do everything that we could because it's important to us that our students have a good experience.
Yeah, and they do. I have to tell you, yeah, my kids, you know, of course, in my poor little Aggie heart, I've had a little bit of heartburn about my, you know, nobody going to Utah State.
But you did it, so we're covered, right? We're covered, and now
we
it's,
did it,
it's
and,
time
and,
for
and
the
my
T-birds.
Kids. But honestly, my kids have had just a phenomenal experience there.
That makes me just, very happy, and that's important to us with every student that
yeah.
we have.
Well, let's talk a little bit too about your students and what's going on with students right now. All over the country and all over the state. Talk a little bit about the kind of issues that students are dealing with now. Maybe that they weren't even 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It's just, there's some different things that are happening with students now.
I think students are facing some hard roads and they will for a good long time. Anxiety is a problem for
yeah.
this generation. I actually think we've always had anxiety. I definitely had anxiety in that age, but there wasn't a name for it, right? We didn't know what it was. We didn't know how to deal with it. Now it's labeled and everybody deals with it, anxiety and depression. Mental health is a big problem for this age group, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart, and that's a priority for me in this interim presidency to take care of the mental health, not only of our students, but our faculty and staff. Find some initiatives to help with that.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about what those initiatives are. I know everybody's trying to struggle with this on all our campuses. I was talking to President Randall, the new president of the University of Utah, and he told me, and see if this sounds familiar to you, he said, we are getting students at 18 that really have the social and emotional maturity of a 15-year-old because of where he got his statistics, but what he said to me was they've had 10,000 less social interactions than say we did when we got into school as a freshman.
Right. Because their social group is online.
Yeah.
And it's really a challenge for them when they get to school. And they don't have their coping mechanisms of their family. They don't have their safety places, and they deal with all of this. So in rural Utah, we have a difficult time attracting counselors and therapists, as anywhere in rural Utah does. We're having a difficult time with that. So our wait time at our counseling center is 6 weeks long. And when a
wow.
student's in crisis, they can't have that. We have a terrific team who has worked hard to get that down and take care of that. And Kurt Hill and Vice President Jared Tippett really work hard for our students. But I asked them to convene a task force on mental health and everything was on the table. We aren't just going to do what we've always done. It's not working. So
yeah.
How are we going to do something different? And they're coming forward with some bold new ideas. For everything from integrating some mental health training into curriculum of, hey, if you deal with anxiety or if you're triggered or if there are some things, here's some things you can do if it's a green space and you just need to take a deep breath. Go walk outside, go take a break. So some training early on that they can know how to stay in that green zone before they get to the yellow or red. Some things like partnering with online mental health providers so they don't have to come to rural Utah, but we can access them wherever they are. And then instead of a 6-week wait period, we have a 6-hour wait period until they can get on with a counselor. So we're looking at all of the options and bringing that together in a big push for mental health, not only for our students, but our faculty and staff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we're, you know, sort of working on, you know, with our initiative, with our, again, we look and adults can't help if they're not healthy themselves.
Right. They so have to really get healthy and we all have to take care of each other, especially coming out of COVID. I think everyone's trying to adjust and figure out what is our new normal and are we expecting it to be like the old normal, but it's not. So yeah. How do we adjust to that and what part of ourselves did we lose during that time? And everybody's working through that together. And I think as much as we normalize that and acknowledge that, it will help all of us.
Yeah. So what are you doing to, are there some incentive programs to get more therapists? Is there a way to, you know, even as higher ed, are we doing more to sort of make sure that we have, I mean, we got to do that with teachers. We've got to do that with everybody. We got to sort of incentivize those areas. Is there something we can do there?
There is, and we're starting our first doctoral program at SUU, and it's in PsyD. So we purposely did that so that we could graduate those students and hopefully have them stay in rural Utah, and that we could have an impact for the good on the healthcare and mental health industry in Utah. And we're graduating those students, but they're also out doing internships in Cedar City and in rural Utah. So we're trying to increase that workforce there, and we'll incentivize that and help them get here. We have our first cohort starting in the fall, and I think that will have a pretty good impact on what we can do with mental health in rural Utah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Our second boy that's down there is going into psychology, just declared. So
fabulous. Perhaps he'll be in the PsyD program in a couple of years.
He may very well. So he's very interested in that kind of thing. So it's
good.
It's a good thing. So we're really excited about that. We know that's really important. So let's talk a little bit about, we've talked about students in there, but what about young leaders, and especially specifically young women? What are your sort of advice, or how do you talk to young women about their paths as leaders? Is there something specific that you give, or you know advice that you give to young women about how to become kind of that leader that the world needs?
I think the best thing that I can do, and I talk to them often, and I in my event management class that I teach, I spend a 2 weeks talking about leadership. And especially pointed toward the women in the class of how we can lean in and things that we do to ourselves to hold ourselves back. I always talk about that, but I think example is the best thing that I can do. And it's been really interesting to watch the young women on our campus watch me and recognize that they have somebody like them in a role that they may want to aspire to. That's been inspiring for them. And that's always hard for me because I just like to quietly go do my thing. Yeah. But to watch them watch me, I know that I need to be that example. And I know I need to be out there doing this and helping them see that it's normal for this leadership position, and let more of them be exposed to that. The advice I would give them is, and I come from a generation that I think tried to open some doors, but maybe held ourselves back a little bit. I think I have definitely, being vulnerable here, I've played the role appropriately and been deferential. And I'm learning, I just need to own who I am and be the leader that I am and work together with people. I'm not trying to run over people, but I think I can own this space better. And that's something that I would teach those younger women, is just go own the space and be who you are and be happy in that space.
That's incredible advice. I think that's, you know, it goes back to that idea of, you know, you have to see it to be it.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think we need to really make sure that young women see that. But also I love the idea of that collaborative spirit. You can't just you need to own your space, but also to make sure that you're collaborating with allies. And yeah. a lot of ways, you know, those you need male allies.
Absolutely.
In this space.
And all ships raise the tide, right? And I'm not trying to take away from their space by owning my space. I think we can all be in the same space together. Yeah. But don't diminish yourself trying to fit in that space. Own that space and be your person and go get whatever you want. I think it's much easier for this younger generation, and they look at me like, why wouldn't you do that? Well, I was raised differently, but that doesn't mean I don't want to do it. So, right, we just need to go own whatever level we're comfortable at and go get it, because women should be everywhere and at every place at the table and be comfortable. But I know I spend a lot of time in my career making sure that I was on the back row, not at the table. Mm. And nobody did that to me. I did that to myself. And that's why I think as women, we need to recognize what we do to ourselves, to put ourselves in roles and just lean right into the table. Mm. We belong at the table and we deserve to be there.
I love that. Well, I want to keep talking about some of these issues. I know that we have some wonderful things going on campus. We have some challenges, and let's keep talking about that when we come right back.
Okay.
We're back here with Mindy Benson. We are interim president of SUU, and we are talking about, you have an incredible event coming up. You have a really cool anniversary coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's the 125th anniversary of SUU. We kicked it off at Founders Week, and it will continue for a year-long celebration. We have one of the most storied foundings in the history of colleges and universities around the country, around the world, really. And we like to celebrate our founders, but not only our founders, our modern-day founders. And that's what the celebration for the next year will be, is celebrating our community, our students, our alumni, and just participating in the great things that are part of our history. Mm. One of the biggest events that we have coming up is commencement, and that's always my favorite time of year. That's why we're here, is to get the students graduated, right? And it's so rewarding to see them thrilled that day. They're just full of joy and tears, and it's so exciting for them.
They can be so proud of what they've done.
Yeah. The traditions surrounding commencement with bagpipes and walking through the bell tower, it makes me cry every single commencement, and I shouldn't, but I do. So this year we have Condoleezza Rice as our commencement speaker.
Which Secretary is incredible.
Rice. I know. I'm so excited for that.
I am so sad I can't be there, because she is seriously one of my kind of heroes. I mean, I don't have a lot of heroes, but I admire her.
Her strength, her resolve.
Steadiness and brilliance. And
the role she's played as a woman in a cabinet. She just, I'm thrilled to have her, and the students will learn so much from her. The fact that she's in Cedar City is only possible because Governor Leavitt and she were secretaries on the Bush cabinet together.
Okay, that's the connection.
Yeah, there's no other way that we could get her to Cedar City, but because of that connection, she's happy to be at his alma mater.
Yeah, she's a concert pianist.
I know. I don't know if we'll have her speak or play or golf.
Or both.
She could do it all.
And then my other most favorite thing about her is like her complete involvement. I don't know if she's totally involved, but NFL football.
I know
football.
She loves football.
Like, she loves football. I connect with that so much.
She's been on those football committees. She's been on the NCAA football committee. She's been so engaged in football, and it's been fun to watch. But I read an article the other day that it's because she likes Tom Brady. Well, maybe it's not because of, but she said she likes Tom Brady, and I thought, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I've heard her name thrown around so much for the NFL commissioner.
I would love to see that.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I would love to see that. I think she can write her ticket anywhere.
I think she could too.
But we're excited to have her at SUU. What an opportunity.
Yep, that's really
cool. And we're sad you can't be with us.
I know. I'm
we'll send you a picture.
Sad. So before we talk about alumni, I want to go back to the founders and the founding of SUU. You said it was a unique story. I want to hear it.
Well, as I said before, Cedar City always rallies, and the legislature had said you can have a school there, but you have to have your first building by this certain time or you're going to lose the state funding for it. Mm-hmm. So our community rallied and said, we've got to go up the mountain to get the lumber. The sawmill was on the mountain, and it was the dead of winter, and it had the worst snow that they've had. I wish we had that now in our mountains, right?
Yes.
But the community said, we'll go. We'll go up the mountain and go get the lumber. And they put a team together, and the team and the horses went up the mountain, but not before all the women in town had gathered supplies and blankets and stuff from tack shops to get them going. So it was a community effort, and they all went up the mountain. And there was an old sorrel horse, and they got to a place where they couldn't go any further, and the storm was coming in, and they were going to get stranded. And this horse had fallen off a ledge when he was a little horse, whatever they're called.
A colt.
Colt is better. See, that's the farm life I live. A little horse. A colt. As a colt, he had fallen off a ledge, and he had to spring forward on his haunches to get up, to back up the ledge. So when they got into this snowdrift and they couldn't go any further, and they were stuck in the snow and stranded, this horse started breaking through the snow with the same motions that he had gotten himself out of that when he was a colt. Mm-hmm. So he was able to do that, and they were able to make it up to the mountain safely and come back down the mountain with the lumber.
Wow.
And then our community gave everything they had. I mean, people had mortgaged their homes and mortgaged their farms to be able to build the university, and they had casket wood that they had brought over with them from Wales and from England. They gave it to the university to build Old Main. It was a true community sacrifice from ranchers, farmers, and miners that would never use the school themselves. They did it for their grandkids. They did it for community members. They did it for generations today.
I think that's...
Isn't that incredible?
It's so inspiring, and I think most of our universities have and colleges have, you know, similar beginnings.
Especially in the rural roots that they had.
Yeah,
the pioneers.
Snow College. Mm-hmm. Same
Absolutely.
Thing. I mean, they gave everything because they knew how important education.
Education. It was all important to them, even though they wouldn't benefit from it. But look at what it's grown into. I would love to think our founders are proud of what we've accomplished now with 75% growth in the last 8 years, thanks to Scott Wyatt and the enrollment team who have done so much to grow our university. Yeah. 75% growth, and we're at 14,300 students.
Wow.
If you put that in perspective, at the 100-year anniversary that we had the celebration of this century, we were at 6,000 students. In 25 years, we have more than doubled.
Wow. Wow.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, it is. It is remarkable. And I think it goes to show, you know, the leadership at SUU and the vision and the sacrifice of the community members. And I you know, I often wonder, I hope they are proud of us. And I hope we're thinking of our, you know, our posterity. And, you know, are we as a community really looking down the road to see if what our actions today are helping somebody down the road? I know with this right. year's legislature, I mean, they were really focused, especially, you know, together with the legislature and the governor's office. It was really focused on how can we investing in the future
and strategically planning for what the future looks like and how we can change people's lives. So that's part of what higher ed does, is change people's lives. They get an education, they get the degree, but they also discover themselves some level.
Yeah, and I hope that never goes away. I know we live in a world, and it's good. It's a good world of sort of we're in this hybrid of where we can, you know, work from home or go to school from home or do these things. But I hope we never lose sight of that. I guess my experience in college was beautiful.
Same for me. That's where I discovered the classes were critical to my success. But I discovered myself being a student leader and running those events as a student leader and working through student leadership development. And that was the career I chose ultimately because of the experience I had as a student. And I love online. Our online has grown 600% in the last couple of years.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I hope we don't lose. And that's what's so important about SUU is the student experience. Mm-hmm. And I will fight to my dying day to make sure that we always have that student experience.
Yeah.
Actually, my ancestors will haunt me.
Yes.
If student leadership experience changes, that student experience changes.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Let's talk a little bit. You said it's growing so much, but you do have a great alumni organization and people around the world that have contributed to SU. Let's talk a little bit about that.
That's what's been fun to watch as we brought more international students in and our students graduate and go back to their homes and across the world. We have alumni across the entire world. We have about 70,000 alumni in our database right now that are very strong, active, engaged alumni. I think I've either taught or advised half of them. And it's been fun because Dad's student leaders are my alumni and my student leaders are my alumni. So we call them up. So do you want to come to an event? Do you want to, anything for you? And then, you know, they'll show up. But we have a really strong alumni base who care deeply about it because they had the same experience that you talked about and the same experience your sons are having.
Yeah.
It's important to make sure that we have that shared narrative and build that shared experience that people want to come back to and that they care about the university.
I love it. And so critical to, again, moving it forward and continuing the
right
things that you're doing. One more thing that's very unique to SUU is the Shakespeare Festival. So
we
haven't talked about that.
Festival.
We alluded to it when you talked about the tart.
Being a tart girl.
Tart girls.
I did graduate into being a house manager, so I wasn't always selling tarts, but so many comments about that.
So let's talk a little bit kind of how that happened. Why is the world premiere, you know, the world's most celebrated Shakespeare Festival, how did it end up in Cedar City?
Well, Fred and Barbara Adams, well, Barbara right. Gaddy at the time. See, you can tell I worked there. But Fred Adams has changed so many lives. And we actually just honored Fred at the Founders Banquet last week. He has changed lives. And part of what he has done is by founding the Utah Shakespeare Festival 61 years ago was change the economic base of Cedar City. And it changed the cultural scene, changed the art scene. But they, at the time, the iron mines were closing and they mm-hmm. recognized that Cedar City needed something. And they said, why don't we start a Utah Shakespeare Festival? So the fluffy bunny laundromat, they started the Shakespeare Festival. They conceptualized that and then started it. And 61 years later, it's thriving. Tony Award winning, incredible Shakespeare Festival that is brings in millions of dollars into the economy of Iron County and Cedar City.
Yeah, and it's just, there's nothing like it. It's an incredible time, and it goes from, what, June to October? Is that the time? And there's incredible Shakespeare plays, and the actors, the caliber of actors that are there. I mean, again, world class.
World-class actors, and some of them are just getting into their careers, and that's when I talk about Benjamin Bratt and Josh Whitfield and Patrick Page and all of that group that are now on Broadway or in movies. They all cut their teeth at the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and actors continue to do that. Ty Burrell was here at the Utah Shakespeare Festival.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he actually played in Midsummer Night's Dream, loved his experience at the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and still lives in Utah some of the time.
Mm. Yeah. I love it. We go every year. And I do have to say that you have, and the reason you're in Salt Lake today, I am assuming, and I will be there tonight.
We'll be there tonight. I look forward to seeing your performance on stage.
We've had some fun events where we've done a full like play where we, you know, we're just reading from scripts, but, you know, we're dressed up and we do this gala and it's a fundraiser for, The Shakespeare Festival.
And tonight they're producing Every Brilliant Thing, which again ties
back to mental
health.
Talk a little bit about that, because I don't know that a ton of people know about this. And it was kind of really taking off before COVID. And now we're celebrating it again. And this play is really meaningful.
The legislature was so good to fund this to go back out into the schools. So it's something that the Utah Shakespeare Festival has taken out into schools because we feel strongly, and it was something SUU sponsored. We want to help with mental health wherever we can. And this play talks about what are the good things in life and what's good that you can celebrate and just different aspects of it, and explores quite a bit of that. And we took it out into schools, and then COVID happened and that the tour had to shut down. But we got funding from the legislature this year to take it back out into the schools again, We're thrilled about that experience and opportunity.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Spencer has seen it. I have not. So
you will love it.
I'm so excited.
I look forward to seeing what role you play.
Yeah, no, I can't fun. Remember. I got a text and it had some lines and I'm really going to have to go look for it again.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
They're always very nice. The folks at Shakespeare are always very sweet and help you out and try to make you not look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main thing that we're trying to do. Just try not to look
back
like an
idiot. Back to that conversation of time and your son doesn't worry about it and we're too wound too tightly.
Yeah.
If we'd let go a little bit, we'd probably have more fun on
yes,
stage.
That is true.
Right?
That is definitely advice for me because I'm
just
not.
Just let go and have a little bit of fun. I can say that because I said, oh, no, thank you. I don't want to be on stage.
Exactly.
So I'll give you the advice.
Thank you.
Let go and have fun. You'll have a great time.
It'll be great. Don't worry about it.
But thanks for participating in that. That's an important thing to support the Shakespeare Festival.
It's a thing we do every year.
Part of our community.
Yeah, we love it. So,
and we love to be able to go out in the schools and help where we can.
And this idea, again, of mental health is so critically important. And this is a way to address that in a really meaningful way that really connects with students in high school. So it's perfect. So
mental health is important. We've got to take care of it. Our students even invested in a student health clinic on campus because they recognize how important it is. Mm-hmm. And they actually said yes to a student fee that they brought it forward as an initiative and said, we need a student health clinic on campus.
Wow.
So students are recognizing the need for this.
And they're just so much better at this stuff than we ever were.
They talk
or will
about
be.
It. We didn't. We just pulled up our pioneer bootstraps and went through it.
Suffered through and gave them.
If you weren't suffering, you're not doing your job.
Right.
You must suffer.
That's right.
And I don't know where we got that from.
It goes way back to those Puritan parts of us. And
it's those hardy pioneers that went up the mountain, right?
Exactly. Which were awesome in a lot of ways. And, you know, for mental health, maybe not as much. So
yeah. I'm glad that we're normalizing and talking about it and finding ways to help each other.
Yeah,
I think it's all about getting through this life together. And taking care of each other as we do that.
Absolutely. And those relationships, I think.
So important.
Like you talked about, always building relationships,
that's
always connecting as humans.
Yeah. Connecting as humans and empathizing and loving and taking care of each other. That's the core of who I am as a leader and as a person.
Perfect message. Thank you, Mindy, for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's wonderful to chat with you. We cross paths many times, but it's fun to just sit down and chat.
Thank you. And we're so happy. And please support Shakespeare and check out SUU and their 125
years. Send your kids.
Years.
We'll take care of them.
Absolutely. They will. I can attest.
Thanks,
Mindy.
Thank you.